Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? No match for a little DIY duct tape. Shoot, hold on. Nope, there we go. No match for a little... Ah, dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape and a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tool I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Ah! On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
From breaking news,
what are we doing?
To breaking balls.
They all move slow now, and they all just want to play softball.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
At second, and two down. Schreiber deals on the ground into the shift. Story slides. He throws it. Boom! What a play from his legs to end it.
A little exclamation mark on this defense by the Red Sox by Trevor Story. Look how far he goes for this ball. Once he gets to it, you know, look, he didn't take any time to flip that thing. And he robs Votto to end this game, a game that they desperately needed. They didn't want to lose this one.
What are we doing?
To breaking balls.
They all move slow now, and they all just want to play softball.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
But this is ultimately what I'm getting at. I follow you. All right, well, that's good to know.
Now, the show that is all baseball.
They're better than they were a year ago.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mazz.
Brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. Bigelow Tea, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, The 99 Restaurants, Sing Sang Cocktail in the Can, Win Waste Innovations, and Woodbridge Wines.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, here we go. A little throwback Thursday. We give you one of the old opens on the Baseball Hour. Some technical difficulties back there. 617-779-0985, rather. We'll open up the phone lines right away. So let me say this up front. The Celtics start at 9 o'clock. Adam Jones will be here in an hour. You want to talk baseball, this is a good little reprieve for you. To get a little sort of, get your mind off of the stress of the game and the finals and all that. We'll talk some baseball for the next hour, and then you can start to ramp up towards 9 o'clock again and get ready for game one of the NBA Finals, which you can hear right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, the only local broadcast of the game taking place right here on 98.5. Kevin Maggiore is producing tonight. Jimmy Stewart is out today. Kevin, can I ask you a quick question? How old are you?
28 this month.
So okay.
27.
So again, Kevin was born, you know, end of the last millennium. And the reason I asked that, you know what we did when I was younger? Felger would remember this, actually. The Celtics fans, especially, used to turn down the volume on the TV on the NBA games and play up the volume of Johnny Most. So you could have the home broadcast with the national TV cameras. That's what you could do. I suggest you do the same for the Celtics game here tonight. Now, as it pertains to the Red Sox, again, 617-779-0985. Couple things I want to get to, including, did you know the top 100 prospects in baseball came out today, according to Baseball America. They do updates on this over the course of time. I want to get to that later because it does speak to a big picture question as it relates to Chaim Bloom. But we're going to start with last night's game. I see a number of you lined up already, and here's what I would say. The Red Sox beat the Cincinnati Reds last night to split a two-game series. They each win one, so again, you know, they didn't lose the series. They didn't win it, but they didn't lose it. They end up going 3-4 in a seven-game homestand. They looked a little bit better last night, and so now instinctively, I know what you're thinking. I know how you feel, because I used to be one of you. I grew up locally, I followed the team, and they're in my blood, they're part of my DNA, just like they are with you. I can separate the two, but I know what you're thinking. Maybe they can get it going now. Here they go, they go to Oakland. They're not out of it yet. And this is one of those things where the Red Sox do just enough to stay in it, just enough to hang around. And it's still early, a lot of baseball left. So, again, I know that part of me feels this way. They did just enough to avoid major damage on this homestand. And so now you're sort of still sucked in to some degree. And you know what I would tell you? It's not enough. It's not enough to be on the periphery of the American League playoff race. They should be in the thick of it. They expect to be in the thick of it. And maybe in another week or 10 days or a month, they will be in the thick of it. But I said this yesterday before last night's game. I'll say it again today. If today were the trading deadline and you had to decide now, buy or sell, I'm selling. They have not done enough for me to buy. I don't know if they've done enough for you. But you can't sit here right now and say, well, I'm going to invest a whole heck of a lot more in this team and go forward. I can't. So the idea that they're just hanging around on the edge of the race, and I know it's early, but the idea that they are hanging around on the edge of it, what does that do for you exactly? You know what that is? They're stringing you along. If you were in a relationship, you would say I'm being strung along. So I'm not telling you, I'm just telling you as of today, they have not done enough. They still haven't done enough. You just feel differently when you come off a win. Think of how you felt a day ago. And the fact that you beat Cincinnati, does that really fix anything? Of course not. 617-779-0985. I want to get to a couple of other things in the show today. Trevor Story had a hit last night, but Jared Karabas helped me unearth a statistic last night on Trevor Story that is really kind of alarming and crystallizes his problems. Again, I want to get to Chaim Bloom, how he's built the Red Sox farm system, and whether or not it's paying off. Also, Garrett Whitlock, as a starter last night, 6 innings, 70 pitches, no runs, no walks, no strikeouts. 3 double plays. Garrett Whitlock. And he got 2 good innings of relief out of Tanner Houck. Kevin in the car wants to start with Whitlock. Go ahead, Kevin. What do you got?
Yeah, I do. First of all, I can't believe he didn't have any strikeouts last night. I don't know if there's any sustenance to that with him being a starting pitcher. It hasn't happened in the last few games, but just something to keep an eye on, I guess. But this team wins more games with him in the bullpen. They just do. I mean, I'm happy for him. It was great to see the win, but they're going to win more games if he is in the bullpen.
So, Kevin, I agree with you. Let me just ask you one question before you go. If Tanner Houck becomes a force in the bullpen, does that make up for it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because I think their pitching styles are different. I think Whitlock has just nasty stuff for an inning or two. I just think overall he's a better pitcher in the bullpen.
Okay. And look, again, now the way I phrased it was, if Tanner Houck, pitches effectively in the bullpen, does it make up for it? The answer is yes. Of course it does. Yes. Now, again, I'm giving you my opinion. When people ask me, I like Whitlock in the bullpen. I liked Houck as a starter because I didn't think Houck had the same kind of control that Garrett Whitlock does. Or I don't think he has the same kind of control. So in the late innings of a game, I'd prefer to have a reliever who comes in, who throws a ton of strikes, who attacks. They both throw in the mid to high 90s, so it's not a question of stuff. They both have good stuff. But I think Whitlock has better command, control, and the game isn't as likely to get away from him in terms of, being all over the place, right? Lack of command and lack of control. But the last couple of times out, Houck's been pretty good. Now, I'll tell you where I am frustrated in that bullpen. And that is that we are now here on June 2nd, and the Red Sox are still trying to figure out or put the pieces in place together to make that bullpen work. That should drive you bananas. Chaim Bloom said as much. We didn't expect to be at this stage of the season and still trying to sort out the bullpen. And that's what they're doing. And the switch from Whitlock to Houck, the flip-flopping of Whitlock to Houck, has contributed to that. So Whitlock has needed time to ramp up in the rotation. And it's not like Houck is pitching back-to-back games yet. They're not there yet. So they're both undergoing this transition. Here we are on June 2nd. They've played a third of the season, and they're still trying to get people lined up in the bullpen. It's taking too long. Now, you can blame Cora for that, but I think that the switch with Whitlock and Houck came from the front office. So, and other than those two guys, who's been really reliable out there? Matt Strom's been okay. But let's face it, you don't have the horses in that bullpen. You need another arm, whether it's from AAA or anywhere else. Nick is in Westport. Nick, go ahead.
Hey, Maz, that's exactly what I wanted to ask you about, actually. I I've come to the realization they're not going to put Whitlock back in the bullpen, which with Houck being in there, I don't mind it all as much because Houck's been good there. But I just wanted to know what's going to go on soon with Siebold or that other kid that you guys were talking about yesterday on the Baseball Hour, the one that's throwing 99 down there, Bayo, whatever his name is.
Yeah,
him. Are the Sox going to be calling either one of them up soon or getting any pitching help up here? Because I don't think it's going to be coming from Brazier or Barn or anybody else that they think they could rely on from the past.
Okay, so that's a good question, Nick. And there are options down there. You saw Josh Winkowski start over the weekend. We didn't really touch on this. Jared Karrabis touched on it briefly yesterday. We just quickly moved. But Winkowski, I wouldn't put too much stock in the one game on Saturday. There's some decent stuff there. I think the kid was nervous as all hell come Saturday. They showed him in the dugout at one point, and I don't know whether this went over the broadcast feed or not. It may have. It may have been the between innings that we saw, in which case I hope I'm not talking out of school. But he was sitting on the dugout bench and bouncing his right knee 100 miles an hour. And again, not that that is the, you know, a lot of people do that. I do it constantly. But I think it was reflective in this case of his overall level of anxiety or energy as it pertained to the game. Now, he said he wasn't nervous, but really, how could you not be? First big league start, Fenway Park, like it's a big moment. I can totally understand if Winkowski were nervous. Siebold had a pectoral strain, so he got derailed a little bit. I think they'd see him as a starter over the longer term. But could he come up and help out of the bullpen this year? Sure, why not? Brian Bayo, again, another one. They see him, I think, potentially as a starter, high-end starter. But the stuff has been off the charts. Could he come up at some point later in the year in the bullpen? Sure. But again, this comes down to a bigger question. The short-term versus the long. The short-term versus the long. Are the Red Sox willing to sacrifice the short-term for the long-term? Are they willing to do that this year? Because it sure feels like they are. Now, my feeling is they've gotten to a point now in Bloom's third year, and he's made some shrewd moves to bring some young talent into the organization. But overall, I feel like they've gotten to a stage where they should be able to do both. They should be able to compete, contend, and get into the playoffs and win a championship, and at the same time continue to develop and build their farm system. They should be able to do both. I still feel, though, like Bloom and the organization, I don't want to single out Bloom because ownership's a part of it, too. I still feel like they put all this emphasis on the long term, and they keep using the word compete for the playoffs and compete for championships and not the phrase win championships. There's a difference. And the compete for championships, the Oakland A's did that for a long time. Hell, the Bruins did it in the 70s and 80s. Even part of the 90s and early 2000s, for that matter. The Minnesota Twins have done it for a long time now. The Tampa Bay Rays. But they don't actually win the title. Or at least not often enough. So, I'll give you more evidence on Chaim Bloom and some positive developments as it concerns the Red Sox farm system. We'll share those with you when we come back. Oh, and I forgot. The fabulous statistic on Trevor Story that Jared Karrabis helped us with last night during his weekly visit. We'll play that for you when we come back on the Baseball.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? No match for a little DIY duct tape. Shoot, hold on. Nope. There we go. No match for a little... dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape than a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tube I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
So my hot take is Trevor Story can't hit a fastball up and in the zone. That's been at the core of his problems. And because he has to gear up for that, he then can't cover the outside part of the plate. So Jared Karrabis did a little research for me here in the last little bit. Tell me, does it hold water?
This was, so I didn't even limit it to up and in. This is just overall.
Okay, overall fastballs.
96 plus.
Yep.
Does not have a hit.
Say that again.
96 plus does not have a hit.
Okay, so on fastballs of 96 miles an hour or greater, Trevor Story does not have a single hit this year.
That's, yes. If what I'm looking at is correct, yes. And then on 95 plus, it's 061 with a 253 OPS.
Okay, so I have said over and over again that I think he has two home runs on fastballs this year. It might be three. There were 94 mile an hour fastballs. Would you say the batting averages on 95 plus, oh what?
061.
Okay. Just quickly, do 94 and above if you would.
94 and below.
Yeah. Can you do that? 94 and below.
94 and below, 248 with an 803 OPS.
It's a 200-point difference. That's where the line is between 94 and 95. You throw above 94 to Trevor Story, 95 or greater, you get a good chance of getting him out with a fastball. Mm-hmm. Last night, he struck out on three pitches, 97, 97, 97. So again, that was last night on the Baseball Hour. Jared Krabbes unearthed some interesting statistics as it relates to Trevor Story. I'm just going to articulate them for you again. I just think they're eye-popping. Absolutely eye-popping. On pitches 96 miles per hour and above, Trevor Story does not have a single hit all season long. Not one. Zero. No hits. 95 and above, he's batting 061. Okay? 94 and below, the number gets into the mid-200s. I think Jared said 248 with an OPS over 800. So really, again, that line for Trevor Story is between 94 and 95 miles an hour. If the opposing pitcher is throwing 94 or lower, Story can handle him. It's fine. No problems. If it's 95 or above, he's in trouble. So last night against Hunter Green of the Cincinnati Reds, who throws 100 miles an hour with a slider that is, 90, Trevor Story went 1-for-3. Yeah, what about last night, Maz? He got a hit. 90-mile-an-hour slider. That's what he hit for a double. 90-mile-an-hour slider. So I just think this is something to watch with Story. And again, look, the whole game is velocity now. It's power. And Story, by the way, in the interest of fairness, made a fabulous defensive play to end that game last night. Now they were up 7-1, but whatever. It was a great athletic play. And he had a hot streak recently like nobody's business. But the large majority of his home runs came on off-speed pitches that were, I would say, more down than up in the strike zone. And they were middle in. So anything, that was lesser speed, middle in on the inner half of the plate, he destroys. Anything that's of greater velocity, he has trouble with. And I would tell you that this goes hand in hand with his inability to deal with the outside part of the plate. Because when you can't handle 96, now you're gearing up for it. Now you're cheating to get there. And what happens is someone throws a slider and you're lunging or you're off balance and now you can't handle it. Now, again, I think Story has gotten better here as years go on. And I'm not telling you that it's not going to change. It could change. It could just be that he's been in a slump or started the year in a slump and he got it figured out because there's a lot of athleticism in that guy. But those numbers are striking. 94 and below, he has an OPS over 800. 95 and above, he has a batting average of 061. 96 and above, he doesn't have a hit all year. Think of that. I mean, that is mind-blowing if you ask me. Dave's in Winchester. Dave, go ahead.
Hey, actually, that the last comment you made on Trevor Story that answers some questions because I called about that yesterday. I'm like, how come this can't guy hit a fastball?
Yeah. So
and,
go ahead, Dave.
And it was like, I'm trying to figure it out, and I'm like, that's kind of what I'm seeing. I'm like, it's like we got a quote unquote all star caliber player, and it's like. You get a daily talk show to do and everything else, but he's like seems like the ultimate like wait and see. And it's like every time I see him at bat, it's like I feel like it's going to be a disappointment. And like you said, he can hit the meatballs, he can do that, but can't cover the plate outside of the plate. Can't hit now. Apparently, he what did you say? He was 0-for-0.
Yeah, he doesn't have a hit with on fastballs above 96 or above. Doesn't have a hit. And you used a good phrase here that I think applies to the whole team. Trevor Story, he's a wait-and-see kind of player. The Red Sox are a wait-and-see kind of team. And that's the problem with them. So I would tell you, I'm not in it for a wait-and-see kind of team with a big payroll and stars in the middle of the lineup. This is an important year. You're coming off the American League Championship Series last year, Game 6, and it's wait-and-see? No, not good enough. The wait-and-see thing doesn't work. I'm not waiting and seeing for anything. I want to see it now. It should have been there right out of the gate. They should have been right in the thick of this thing from the very beginning. Instead, wait and see. Wait and see is a loss, is what I'm getting at. As far as the Red Sox season is concerned, wait and see is a loss. Or is it? So again, let me just ask you this question. Baseball America, which I deem to be the Bible when it comes to assessment of minor leagues and farm systems. Baseball America had the Red Sox a couple of years ago in the 20s as far as their minor league operation, their farm system. By the start of last season, I think they were 9th, and they ended last season, I want to say 11th. Okay, but they've now basically cracked the top 10. So I think that that's obviously a good sign for the longer term. I think that Chaim Bloom has done an excellent job replenishing the system with some talent. And there is some promise down there. For example, Baseball America released today an updated list of the top 100 prospects in baseball. Now, there was a time when the Red Sox didn't have many players on this list at all. They now have 4, and they're all in the top 50. Marcelo Mayer is number 12 in all of baseball. He was the number 4 pick a year ago. He's already the number 12 prospect in all of baseball. Tristan Casas, number 20. He's at AAA. He'll be here before the end of the year at some point. Nick York, number 33. Bloom drafted him 2 years ago. I think that's right. Was his first draft or his second draft? In any case. And Brian Bayo, number 49. He's the guy that's throwing, you know, bullets down at AAA. Maybe he could be up here later in the year working out of the bullpen as well. So let me ask you a question. Would you trade any of those guys if you were a fan? Or are you more in it for the long term? And what I would tell you is if you're the Red Sox and you have a chance of winning a championship, and I don't know, maybe you don't trade any one of those guys, but would you trade Brian Mata? Would you trade someone else in the system that has promise with the chance to win? Because you can't just keep all of your prospects. You can't do it that way and win a World Series, I don't think. Not all of your prospects. Someone told me a long, long time ago that ideally what you want to do when you are a championship caliber team, you want to keep introducing about a prospect and a half per year into your operation. 3 prospects every 2 years. Okay? So 1.5 obviously can't work. 1 year, 2 the next. Just keep adding them. And the Red Sox were doing this for a period of time, if you remember, in the 2000s. John Lester, Jonathan Papelbon, Jacoby Ellsbury, Dustin Pedroia. Meanwhile, they still had Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz, and they had the money to go out and spend. It was clicking on all cylinders. That's where they should be now. That's where they should be now. It should not be an either or. It should be both. And I feel they've gone too far in the direction of long-term all the time over short. And there's a comment from pitching coach Dave Bush last night, and there's nothing inflammatory about it, but I think it reveals the overall philosophy that has now sort of taken over the organization regarding the longer term. We all know the longer term's important. The question is, can the long term be important and the short term also be important? Do you have to sort of look past a run at a championship to put it on the organization? I feel like the scale is tipped too much in the opposite direction. I'll read you that quote from Dave Bush. We'll take your calls. I see a few of you on there, and I absolutely will get to you when we come back on the Baseball Hour.
Roto-Rooter. Plumbing problem? No match for a little DIY duct tape. Shoot, hold on. Nope. There we go. No match for a little... Ah, dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape than a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tube I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Ah! On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
Ply.
Now more baseball and more Mavs.
Okay!
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mavs on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And now now here in the first. Tyler Stevenson rolls into Bogarts, and Story's turn, and plenty of time for two for Whitlock in the first. First and second, he got them. And here it is on cue. It's Bogarts, Devers, it's two. A third one for Whitlock.
Who cares about strikeouts?
From Whitlock. In the air, right field, and Cordero toward the line makes the catch. Six innings of one-run ball from Garrett Whitlock.
Long-term versus short-term, that's the question. Has the balance gotten out of whack with the Red Sox? And Garrett Whitlock is in the middle of this discussion. So let me explain. Garrett Whitlock last night, six innings, 70 pitches. No walks, no runs, no strikeouts. It's like a historic collection of zeros there. It rarely happens that way. Rarely. Alex Spear had some great numbers on that in today's Globe. After the game, Dave Bush, the pitching coach, was asked about Whitlock's transition of the rotation, and he said, quote, "He's handled himself very well. He's also very good in the bullpen. It's a nice problem to have. We have a guy that can do both for now. But for now, his role is as a starter. He's pitched very well and certainly earned the opportunity to keep doing that. What the future holds, I have no idea. But there's still a lot of development for him to do as a starter, and he's continued to get better." Okay, still a lot of development to do for him as a starter, and he's continued to get better. Why is Garrett Whitlock in the rotation at all? He started the year in the bullpen. The Red Sox had a need there. Cora spoke in spring training like he wanted him in the bullpen. He kept saying over and over again, we know he can do this, and there's an unknown with the other thing, but we know for sure he can pitch out of the bullpen in the big leagues. Then Whitlock pitched well out of the bullpen to start the year. Then all of a sudden they flipped him and Tanner Houck. Some of that was as a result of Houck being unable to make a start in Toronto because he's unvaccinated and wasn't able to play up there. But regardless, the point is the Red Sox knew what the abilities of these pitchers were during spring training. Why didn't they, if they wanted Whitlock to start, why didn't they just start him in the rotation at the beginning of the year and put Houck in the bullpen? Why did they do it the other way around? And what led to the switch? I don't understand it. And that comment about how Whitlock has to develop as a starter, true. And I fully recognize that Garrett Whitlock is a unique case. And by that I mean he was a Rule 5 acquisition post-pandemic. So in order to keep him as a Rule 5 acquisition, the Red Sox had to have him on the big league roster. He wasn't ready to take on the role of a starting pitcher and go five innings, 30 starts. So they put him in the bullpen. They used him sporadically. And then as the year went along, they realized they had a weapon. And they started using him more in the second half. So now 22 comes around. And clearly, Chaim Bloom plucked him from the Yankees with the idea of him being a starter. But the 2022 Red Sox needed Whitlock in the bullpen. So the long term won out. The Red Sox put Garrett Whitlock in the rotation. And at the time, I want to say they were 6-5. I'd have to go back and look. But I think they were right around 500. Then they made the switch, and all of a sudden they really started to lose and blow games. And I don't think they've ever recovered. Now, maybe they will now. Maybe Houck will pitch better out of the bullpen. All good. But it's taken them 50 games to figure that out? That's a mistake. And I don't think it was Cora. I think Bloom, for whatever reason, they started with him in the bullpen and then Bloom changed his mind or Bloom overruled. Whatever it was, it made no sense for Whitlock to start the year as a starting as a reliever. And then what was it, 11 games in, 12 games in, all of a sudden flip him to the bullpen, flip him to the rotation? What was that all about? We still don't have an answer on that. Joe is in the car. Joe, what do you got?
Hey, Tony, how you doing tonight? I have two things in my mind, and I think you can answer both of them. The first one is, Thursday night, I'm listening to you guys all day and even the evening, and I'm thinking the Red Sox got Baltimore and Cincinnati coming in. So I'm feeling 6-1, 5-2 at the worst. 3-4 against two of the
Worst teams in baseball, Joe. Two of the worst teams in baseball. You can say it. Go ahead.
Right. Okay. Two of the worst teams in baseball. The second one is, Tony, is Bloom feeling? I mean, look at the story thing. He's not going to sign.
Joe, I don't want to cross too many things. I'm going to let you go just because I got other people on the line. Here's what I would tell you. It feels like every decision that Bloom makes is geared more towards the long term than the short. Even Trevor Story. It's about safeguarding the organization for the departure of Bogarts so they don't have to pay Bogarts. And look, again, he might be right. He might be right. I do wonder, though, whether ownership intervened and pushed him to sign Trevor Story because there was some backlash from the clubhouse, if you remember, in spring training. It was a shortened spring. It was a shortened offseason. These players are being gobbled up everywhere. The Red Sox weren't doing anything, and there was some grumbling from the clubhouse. All of a sudden, they signed Trevor Story in the middle of spring, and I'm not sure Story even wanted to come here. They might have been in on it from the beginning, but I'm not sure they wanted to go to the contract that he wanted to go to. Mike's in Connecticut. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, Tony. How are you? I'm just interested in hearing your take. You know, I don't know how much more time they're going to waste on, you know, Bobby Dalbec. I mean, obviously, you know, the guy, you know, can't you know, hit the ball. And I mean, Francisco Cordero, you know, he's you know, really, you know, doing well. And, you know, he's hitting 247. And, you know, I just don't know how much longer they're gonna waste time with Bobby Dalbec.
Okay, Mike, let me ask you a question. Do you know who Tristan Casas is?
I hear he's a prospect on AAA.
Okay, and he is, and he's a first baseman. So, again, I come back to the same point. Why would the Red Sox go out and spend money on a first baseman, make some sort of long-term commitment there when they get Casas coming? Except that in the process now, for 2 years, they've had Dalbec and Franchy Cordero and Kyle Schwarber playing first base. And we all like Schwarber's bat, but he's not a first baseman. So I come back to the same thing. How many stopgap guys are you going to have at first base? So obviously Bloom does not value defense at first base. He thinks it's overrated. He might be right. But I'm just telling you again, Casas has been coming, so they're willing to give away, what, a couple of years at first base just because Casas is coming? Long-term over the short. Again, it's always long-term over the short. That's what it feels like. John's in a car. John, go.
Tony, you know, the funny thing about Whitlock is Hyman Roth is like the brainchild for can't see a guy more than three times in an at-bat, so you may as well keep him in the bullpen. Because what are you going to do, pitch him six innings every time? It doesn't make sense in his own logic.
Yeah, I don't know if that was an attempt at humor, John. But Bloom, look, all I'm telling you with Bloom is it's illogical to me. You know, and this happened to Theo, too, when he was the general manager. There's a tendency for these young general managers to fall in love with their own prospects and their own player development systems. I don't know whether Bloom is that guy or not. He might just shuffle these guys through like nobody's business. But when a guy takes over an operation, he can get very territorial and very possessive about his prospects. I think Ben Cherington did to a certain degree and to a flaw, to the point where like he really couldn't pull the trigger on a trade and make a big move. Eventually, they had to bring in Dombrowski, who made the move to get Chris Sale. And Dombrowski went too far in the other direction. He came in, none of the prospects were his, so he just unloaded them all. It's like these guys all personalize it. It's weird. It's about the success of the big league club. Nobody gives a rat's ass if you win at AAA and AA. Nobody cares. Now, you need those levels to get big league players and to keep pumping out big league players. That is obvious, and it makes sense. So, of course, you want to produce good players through the minor leagues. Ideally, if you can, you'd like to put them in winning environments. You certainly don't want to put them in losing environments. So I'm not telling you winning in the minor leagues is worthless, but prospects are developed to either contribute at the major league level so you can win, or to trade for something at the big league level so you can win. That's the point. So this idea of the development of Garrett Whitlock, and again, he's a unique case because of the Rule 5 part of it. But now they're going to develop Whitlock as a starter in the big leagues when they need him in the bullpen? So what is this, player development now at Jersey Street? Anthony on the Cape. Anthony, go ahead.
Tony, yeah. So as far as the Red Sox pitching prospects, I really like Bello or Bayo, Scott Bayo, whatever. And I really like Brandon Walter. He's a lefty they just called up from Double A to Triple A.
Right.
I'm not big on Winkowski and Seabold at all. We saw Seabold last year. The guy throws like 89, okay? And Winkowski, if anything, used him out of the bullpen. What I'm wondering is, how much value does Jay Groom still have? Because he's the guy I think we can afford to trade, and I think he still has some value. And the guy I'd like to see if we can get Scott Barlow out of Kansas City. He's a really nasty, you know, late-inning relief pitcher. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's got a couple of years left on arbitration, and I just wonder if we can snag him for a guy like Jay Groom. What kind of value does he have left?
Okay, so look, I don't know enough about the guy in Kansas City to, and I don't know about the service time without looking it up. I'm not going to lie to you. So I'd have to look that up in terms of what you'd be able to give up to get him or whether the Royals would be even willing to move him. Groom feels like a guy that they should want to move. You're wrong about Seabold. He throws harder than 89. Seabold in spring of last year was hitting 96, 97 miles an hour, which surprised even them because he wasn't throwing that hard when he was with the Phillies. He was down a couple of ticks, but the velocity picked up and they became more intrigued with Seabold. Winkowski looks like he's got a pretty good arm, but I don't think that he's some sort of stud. And the secondary pitches to me did not look especially good. But for a guy who throws a lot of strikes, over the weekend, he went through a stretch where I think he walked two guys in a row on eight pitches or something close to it. He was nervous. So hard to get a read on that kid from that game. Okay, now, could he be a big league pitcher in the bullpen? Sure, but they need a pitcher now. Now. You just had Baltimore and Cincinnati in here with a chance to get over 500 and get back in the thick of this thing, and you missed the opportunity in large part because you blew that game on Friday night. And that was 100% bullpen. So I understand the logic of, well, Garrett Whitlock started that game. You wouldn't have had the lead without Garrett Whitlock. I also think there was something to be said for pitchers who can get guys out two times through the order. So you know why a lot of these starters can get through the order two times? Because it's easy, relatively, or easier. The third time is harder. So if I can find someone to get me through the order a couple of times, why wouldn't I leave Whitlock in the bullpen when there is a need in 2022? I just don't get it. I feel like the Red Sox are now sacrificing too much in the short term. I can't get excited about a 4-1 win or a 7-1 win. They got three runs late. A 7-1 win over the Cincinnati Reds that split a two-game series. I can't get excited about that. If and when they play consistently well for a longer period of time, then Chaim Bloom can say that he was right, or you can say that Chaim Bloom was right, all of which is fine. But there's constant need now, it feels, to put the long term over the short, which means no really big contracts. I don't count the Story deal. It's not quite the same. But no gargantuan contracts and nothing that is even remotely risky. You got to take some risk. Otherwise, you're just going to be the Oakland A's or the Tampa Bay Rays. That's all. That's my only point. We'll come back and wrap it up here shortly. I do want to touch just quickly on this Josh Donaldson story as it pertains to Tim Anderson. There was another development here in the last day or so. We'll do that when we come back on the Baseball Hour.
Roto-Rooter. Plumbing problem? No match for a little DIY duct tape. Shoot, hold on. Nope. There we go. No match for a little... dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape and a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tool I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Ah! On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Before we let you go, let me just do this quickly. Josh Donaldson of the Yankees was involved in an incident with Tim Anderson of the Chicago White Sox recently, and I don't want to get into the details because it'll take me more than a minute and a half, which is all I have. But suffice it to say that Donaldson in the process said something that was deemed to be racially insensitive, and which I thought, frankly, was just a stupid comment, and was subsequently disciplined by the league for it. More importantly, his teammates and his manager did not defend him. Donaldson said in the last day or so, "I think that was tough to hear, for sure. Just the simple fact that I pride myself on being a good teammate. And everywhere I've went, every organization that I've been a part of, minus Oakland, has offered me extensions, has wanted me to stay back," Donaldson said during batting practice. "They've showed they wanted me as a part of their team. Obviously, it didn't work out that way. And that's just the business end of it. And also, everywhere I went, I've won. I think part of winning is having good team chemistry. I take pride in blah, 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 blah." So I would say this whole thing that Josh Donaldson is this guy that everybody wants is freaking delusional, okay? And you can't be a guy like Josh Donaldson who goes around shooting his mouth off all the time, pissing off people, alienating teammates and franchises to the point where he has now been moved, oh gosh, how many different times? He went from Oakland to Toronto to Cleveland to Atlanta to Minnesota to the Yankees. He's been at seven franchises, I think that is, Oakland, Toronto, Cleveland, Atlanta, Minnesota, the Yankees, at six. Since 2018, he's played for Toronto, Cleveland, Atlanta, Minnesota, or New York. So in 5 years, he's played for five teams. Has it ever occurred to this guy that you're the problem? So you're annoyed that the Yankees didn't stand behind you? Nobody stands behind you. Look in the mirror, dude. Good grief. Talk about clueless. Adam Jones, Christian Arcan coming up next. Are they both in studio, Kevin? Or are they? Okay, they're here. They'll take you up to 8 o'clock. At that point, are we doing Celtics pregame or 8:30? 8:30 Celtics pregame. Okay, there you go. Game's at 9 o'clock. So Jones and Arcan have you for the best next 90 minutes, rather. And then Sean Grandy and Max will have game one of the NBA Finals for you. Again, the only local broadcast right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. We'll see you tomorrow.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? No match for a little DIY duct tape. Shoot, hold on. Nope. There we go. No match for a little... dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape than a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tube I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.